Okay, so we will begin. Welcome, panel. And James, please introduce your panel, then you can kick off.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is the engineering at scale, and we'll discuss building solutions that reliably scale. I'm going to get straight into the panel. We don't have a lot of time, so that at least you can have questions from the audience, etc. So I'll introduce the panel, the distinguished panel that I have today. And first up is a lady engineer who saved this panel from becoming a manor. and her name is Donna Sarkar, and she's the head of the Windows Insiders program at Microsoft. And next up is Hoop Somoa, and he's the technical advisor to Satya Nadella, the Microsoft CEO. And then next up is John Muthiori, and he's a technical advisor, he's a head of technical operations at Mkopa Solar. And next up is Bryce Kensa, he's a director of engineering at Andera. So I want to start with Donna. Or rather, this question is actually to all of you. So you just take it from this side, going that way. And sort of introduce yourself, basically what you do at your organization, and also share your experience with engineering at scale.
Thank you, James. You're welcome. I watched a blind man put his life into the hands of a stranger. Hey, Cortana, call an Uber. At that moment, my team and I, we had a realization. Every single person has problems in their life. Most people know the solutions, and many of those people actually want to work with others to implement that solution, so you actually solve that problem. This is fundamentally what the Windows Insider Program is. That man is Jason. He belongs to the Toronto School for the Blind. He is their technical liaison. He is the most technical blind person there. He is a Windows Insider. Windows Insiders are the millions who represent the billions. They're the millions of people that we co-create Windows with for the billions of people out there who have problems, but they love that their solutions are being created with us for people like them. One of the things that engineering at scale has become very obvious, especially this week, is that scale does not mean numbers. It means quality. A product that we're building that works for blind people may not be the exact same product that we build that works on the continent of Africa. They might be the same, or they might optimize for one over the other. One thing that's become very, very obvious to us in the past year, and for me especially in the last 7 months that I've been running the engineering program for Windows Insiders, is that there is no part of the product cycle, the existing product cycle that we know so well, where the customer's engagement is not needed. So from the first moment where you decide, like, hey, I need to analyze customer data, you've engaged the customer. You're looking at their data, analyzing what they're trying to do. The next phase, where you're in ideation, you're building prototypes, you better be A/B testing these ideas with this customer base that you're building for. Does it solve their problem or not? The third part, where you're influencing stakeholders, building an engineering team, that customer's feedback is what's going to get your product built. By the time you're ready to take your product and put it in beta, you don't need to go find a beta audience. You've already got these people who you've been co-creating this idea with all along. And when you ship, is it shipping or is it just yet one more spoke in this wheel of development? We realized by keeping our Windows Insiders community at the center of our product development, it's not just us, thousands of Windows engineers building this product, but it's our army of 7 million plus humans. So diverse, so amazing, unique experiences who bring their histories and their stories to the table to help us truly engineer a product for scale.
Okay, cool.
Hi, I'm Satya Nadella's technical advisor, but prior to doing that job, I worked for 5 years as the cloud services architect in a group at Microsoft called 343 Industries. They're most known for their work on the Halo Xbox video game. And if you can imagine, there's millions of people who play Halo. So what happens on the day a new Halo game comes out? Millions of people take their discs and they all put them into the Xbox at approximately the same time. and you see the number of users in your service go from zero to millions of people almost instantaneously. Ordinarily, that's a really, really great thing, unless your system can't scale to the needs of those users. It's a really terrible experience when you're looking at your user, the number of users of your service grow, and then all of a sudden the performance of your service starts going in the opposite direction. And to me, scale is about building systems that can scale out to large numbers of users while maintaining a great experience for all of those users who are using the service. And that requires you to deeply understand both the engineering of the system as well as how your users are going to use it. Because if you don't have a million users show up at your service in a matter of hours, then you need a very different architecture. And so I've spent most of my time at Microsoft working on services and back-end architectures that meet these types of needs. And it's a very interesting challenge. And I'm actually really excited about some of the interesting scale challenges that I've been learning about here at this conference, because I think scale has a very different face when you look at it through the lens of Africa.
Fantastic. Thank you, John.
I'm John Muthiora, and working in the technical operations team at MCOPA means that we not only operate the technology, but also feedback into the engineering team about how we will scale solutions for our customer needs. For me, scale is about the customer. It's really about their service and experience of interactions with us, whether it's when they're registering up for a service or a product, or when they call us up to finalize that transaction, or when they pay us the week later to process their first payment. We found challenges around registration, mobile network outage, call center congestion, for various reasons. Or on the other extreme end, like you said, Hoop, there are times when our customers, and generally this happens every day, they have certain preferences for when they'd like to pay us, generally in the evening. And this triggers the button press I told you about earlier today, where we send credits out to them shortly after they pay, within a few seconds, but their devices are also sending us battery readings that they've been collecting for 12, 24, 36 hours. And they all come in pretty, pretty quickly and all at the same time. Our systems should be able to service every request coming to them within a reasonable amount of time without affecting the customer adversely. Why? Our customers depend on us to deliver, for some of them, critical services. For example, take the case of a child who's preparing for a national exam, which will determine how their life pans out in the future based on the preparation they're doing. If for a particular week we consistently deliver credits an hour or two or three later, that has a direct impact on their performance, because that's sort of the only time they would have to finalize their preparations for that exam. And so this is life transforming, where we do the opposite and rapidly deliver those credits shortly after they are paid. So for me, scale is about service. Scale is about our customers and what they need from us.
Yeah. Bryce.
Hi, my name is Bryce, Director of Engineering at Andela. When I think about engineering at scale, I think about elasticity, and I think about the ability of your platform or system to respond to either an increase of the on demand or even a decrease on demand. And I also like to think about defining scale. What is scale, really? For example, at Andela, we want to build, we want to create 100,000 developers over the next 10 years, right? So with an acceptance rate of 1%, that means 10 million applicants that we need to have. So we need to think about that when we're building our recruitment tools and think about, okay, what does that mean in terms of our platform? What does that mean in terms of our database? Where do we store all that data? What does that mean in terms of our systems, our response time, and all of that stuff? And just trickle that down all the way to the engineering. Another thing I also like to think about is just the way the engineering team performs as a whole or operates. We've all heard the story of Elon Musk turning a customer complaint on Twitter into execution in 6 days. That means like the engineering team is really lean and is able to like adapt to that. And that, to me, that's engineering at scale as well.
Fantastic. I have a question for you. What challenge? What's the top challenge that you faced? You know, while scaling. Of course, you started with fewer students, with fewer students in the program, and then now you have more. So what was your top challenge, and then how did you overcome it? And then also, I realize that you were there from the beginning, so you have that origin story about Barandela from then now till now.
The top challenge was, I think, in engineering part, the top challenge is recruiting. I think finding technical talent in Africa is really hard. There's a lot of smart people in Africa, for sure, but finding the people that have been exposed to the proper ways of building, of like a software engineering, continuous deployment, test-driven development, and all those things is really challenging. So that's one of the challenges we had to face, and I think the way we trying to overcome that challenge is really referrals and having the people that we hired, like the good people, to like refer us to all of their friends and all of the other developers, like the community and all of that.
Fantastic. My next question is to John. Which tools and technologies have you used, at MCorpa to scale? And then also, have you ever used open source? What's your open source technologies and what's your view on them?
Those are interesting questions. It might be fair to say that we are well on track to using a lot of what Microsoft has in the cloud. By posture and mindset, we're a cloud-first company. Every decision around infrastructure and technology will be driven into the cloud or from the cloud or through the cloud. And the reason for this is because of the engineering challenges we faced, designing solutions that would scale rapidly, that would need to perform at stretched levels during certain peak times. We need to support different markets, and our customer characteristics can sometimes be very diverse in terms of their payment behavior, communication behavior, and their specific needs. We have used different solutions to scale both vertically and horizontally. We have leveraged Microsoft's Azure platform, as I said before, the virtual machine technology. We use everything from infrastructure as a service all the way to software as a service. And so our current posture is to ensure that as much as possible start with software as a service where we don't operate any of the technology and outsource that to the great team at Microsoft. And where that's not possible, run that either as infrastructure as a service or at the last resort as platform as a service. And so as Andreas in our team mentioned earlier, we are running a large number of virtual machines which are integrated with queuing mechanisms such as Service Bus and RabbitMQ, which is also available on the Azure Marketplace, to ensure that we're able to handle the load of volume of events coming in through our systems. We have made decisions around SQL Azure databases. So rather than run VMs with SQL Enterprise, we are again having that scale out by going into the platform, well, into infrastructure as a service or platform as a service, depending on what the need would be. We've also looked at monitoring, and during the last talk, there was some talk about OMS, which is the operations management suite. One of the great advantages of that is the log analytics capabilities. Given the number of systems we are running, both on-prem in terms of routers, switches, network components, as well as endpoints in the cloud, The volume of data goes into hundreds of millions of records just in a month. We could build out the infrastructure for that. And initially, we did use OMS. However, because of certain price point issues, once we started increasing the number of nodes and the volume of records, we then had to consider our own internal built solution. And so we are currently using the Elk stack for logging within Azure, running on Linux. Yeah.
Interesting, and that goes back to what you said for saying that you can use Azure. You can choose to use all the products if you want, some of the products, or you just use the infrastructure, and then you create your own software. So that's really, really interesting to hear, yeah. About how you've implemented it. I think my next question is to Hoop. So what data considerations, when you're engineering a skill, what data consideration, should organization, have in mind, for instance, are you going to host, some data yourself, or maybe specific customer data, on site, and then anonymize data, on the cloud, etc.
That's an excellent question. I think these days, when you think about getting to certain levels of scale, that becomes a very, very challenging question. The first thing that comes to mind for me when I think about my data is, how do I make sure I don't lose it? And if you really want to keep your data, one of the benefits of the cloud is, if you're storing data in Azure, for example, we will replicate your data for you, we'll store multiple copies of it. And that's very important to make sure you don't lose your data. The other thing that I think is a more subtle problem that you need to deal with is, at scale, you're guaranteed to have things like network partitions and other things that make it a little bit difficult to scale to a large number of users all accessing the same pieces of data. And so there's a lot of different options available to you. For example, if you use, Microsoft has a database solution called DocumentDB. And it's a NoSQL database, which means it's not a relational store, it's not like SQL Server, and your data is stored like a JSON document. But the real interesting thing about DocumentDB is they give you different levels of consistency for your data. So I might write something into my data store, and 10 seconds later, someone across the world tries to read the data. They might not be able to see the thing that I wrote because it hasn't fully replicated to all the different places. So there's all these interesting extra challenges that start coming online, and some of the solutions from cloud providers, again, DocumentDB is one of my favorite examples, because sometimes if you're doing a very critical transaction, like a banking transaction, you want strong consistency or linearizability. You want to make sure that as soon as your write is done, everybody in the world can see that data has been written. But that's a very expensive operation to perform, and it costs a lot of money to actually make that happen. So a lot of your writes, you're gonna do something called eventual consistency, and you're gonna think about saying, who actually needs to see this? And DocumentDB allows you to scale from strong consistency all the way through a model called bounded staleness, which says that I'm okay with seeing data that is old as long as it's not too old. And so that variety of options is really, really critical to designing a really good system. My old manager used to say that when you're designing in the cloud, you really need to apply cost-driven development. You could easily take an existing solution and force it to work in the cloud. But what's really interesting when you're thinking about the cloud, specifically with data, is you really want to be cloud native. You want to think about solutions that are designed for the very broad nature of the cloud and the dystopian nature of the cloud. Things are going to fail and you need to be ready for it.
In fact, that reminds me that one of the other things I didn't mention that we're using again for compute and reporting and analytics is Power BI. Mm-hmm. Power BI has supported us to draw data from different data sources, both on-prem, in the cloud, and in different regions of the cloud. And yes, we've had to accept some amount of staleness for certain types of data, mm-hmm. because we are aware that, we are aware of the nature of the cloud, and so we would want data replicated within real time, within a suitable amount of time before we query it. We're also using Azure Table Store, Azure Blob Store, we are also now fully live on Dynamics AX7. I think we were the second company in Africa to start off that process. We may have been the first to go live, need to verify that, but we are effectively, like I said earlier, as much as possible cloud native, with priority on Microsoft Azure.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Thank you for that, John. I'd ask, if you have a question, please raise your hand so I know where you are. Anyone with a question? Okay. Where are the mics? Just hand them the mics as I ask Donna the last question. I think let's start with this gentleman here. Yeah, it's him. But don't ask the question first. Let me finish with Donna. So Donna, so technology is constantly changing. Mm-hmm. As you're implementing one thing, other technologies are coming, are coming up, etc. And so how do you keep abreast And of course, also keep your sanity, because of course, you know, like he said, how they started off with something, it didn't quite work, then they had to build their own, system, sorry. So how do you keep abreast?
Once upon a time, long time ago, the only thing that mattered to companies were units of sales. How many of this thing did you sell? It didn't matter who you were selling it to or what they did with it. All that mattered was how many you sold, how much money you made. Then for tech companies, things started to change. It became active users. How many people returned to your service? Daily active users, monthly active users. For Amazon, like active users in December at between midnight and 1 a.m. because they forgot to order their gifts, right? Mm-hmm. So it all became about active users, but still not about what they did with it. What did these customers do? What were they trying to do with all of these active users? Nowadays, there's so many options out there. For every company that's big or any company that's established, there's a startup popping up and saying, you know what? I'm gonna disrupt you because you've had this space for far too long and I understand the evolving needs of today's customer and the next generation of customers much better than you do. So the only way that companies can compete is to build up their platform. And that platform are the humans who amplify your product, who use your product, who talk about your product, who you co-create with to actually build that product. Now, when you're building with community, it's really important for you to understand who exactly is your member network. If you have more than one product like we do, we can't just think of it as, hey, the Windows network is the Windows insiders, or the Office insiders, or the Azure insiders. We have to think of this as a network of people where as you add people to this network, the value of each human's experience goes up. It was fascinating hearing you talk about Azure and Elk, right? This is not something I know about, but I'm gonna go look this up because I need to know that there are people in our member network who are using Windows plus Azure plus Elk. Likewise, we have to understand that there's people using Windows, iOS phone, Azure. That's a very, very common setup. We can't just ignore it, right? Yeah. But we have to overlap these member networks. And sometimes it means not just even within our company, right? If I'm a company who is building mobile apps, I have to think about how it works across operating systems. I have to think about how it works across devices. So being able to layer networks and say, like, who are my key partners that we must work well together with, and how can we overlap their kind of insider audiences? Every company has an insider audience. It's people who are early adopters, people who give a lot of feedback, very high participants in co-creating with them. These are the people who, you know, get the beta on day one. It's the tricky thing there is to make sure that you don't over-index on getting feedback from one kind of customer. We call them the tech enthusiast. Because if you over-index on only tech enthusiast feedback, you're gonna have a very tech enthusiast product rather than a product for the global consumer, the global entrepreneur, IT professionals, normal people, right? Exactly. So for us, that's been the unique challenge of the Windows Insider Program is figuring out how do we segment out our customer base so we are looking at feedback with the lens of, okay, this is coming from people who are IT professionals.
I'm sorry, Donna, I have to cut you.
Cut me off. I can talk about this all day. But thank you for that, because you gave me a new thing to look up.
To cut you
and
short.
That's how we learn.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. The gentleman, just tell us your name, and then tell us your name, where you're from, and then the question. In brief, please.
Okay. My name is Karibu, and I'm from Kenya. I lead a startup called K3. My question specifically was around this idea of looking at scale through the lens of Africa, which you talked about, Hoop. And specifically, you know, the two challenges I've run across is, one was mentioned, is recruiting talent who knows how to architect for scale, no matter where you are in the world. And then the second is some of the infrastructural issues that we face because we are in Africa. So I would just love if you could address that question in terms of how do you look at scale through the lens of Africa, either from a customer experience, an infrastructure experience.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, I have to cut you short. We don't have a lot of time, so just answer quickly.
Okay, thanks for bringing that up because I was looking forward to talking more about that. One of the reasons we're doing this conference is because we want to learn more about what it means to scale technology in Africa, to build technology for Africa. I think one of the things that I've learned in just today is how real the need for people to build solutions is. There's a lot of people who are coming and saying, yeah, I have this idea, I just need to find people. And Microsoft has programs like My Skills for Africa and stuff that are addressing this need. We've got the Virtual Academy to try and mint technical talent and grow talent. And then we have amazing initiatives like Andela that are doing similar approaches. I think we all have a lot of work to do in this space. And I'm sorry, the second question was around talent. But
the challenges for Africa.
Yeah, the challenges for Africa for me, one of the conversations Don and I have been talking about is like, when you come to Africa, we're much more occasionally connected to the internet than other people. It doesn't mean that we don't have as good internet. It's just I might walk out from here and I'll switch Wi-Fi networks, which means I'll drop my TCP/IP connections. And all of these are problems that people, when I'm on the Redmond campus, I can walk for a mile and I won't change networks. And so these are very different problems that people are facing here. And I think when we build solutions for this market, we'll actually build solutions that can scale much better to the entire world. And that's the really interesting lens that Africa gives. Does that sort of answer your question? Okay. Sorry, I know we're short on time. So if anybody wants to talk more about this, I could go for days afterwards.
Okay. Next question.
My name is Josphat Deine. I come from Kenya. You talked about changing technology. I wonder how Microsoft, you are preparing to enter into the field of quantum computing.
You can take that one.
So a lot of people have been looking at quantum computing for a long time, and I will confess that I'm not an expert on quantum computing. Every time I start learning about it, I get scared and run away because they tell me that it's going to change everything.
Yeah, quickly,
like
at once.
Huge disruptive change. But Microsoft we have a group called Station Q. We have a number of researchers around the world who have been looking at quantum computing for quite some time now. And so if you'd like to learn more, I can give you, like, we should meet offline and I can give you some information about how you can learn about the research they've done. And besides that, I'll just say that Microsoft is heavily invested in making sure that we understand this space.
Okay.
The question I'll ask you just quickly is, what are you trying to do? A lot of people come in and say like, hey, I want to use quantum computing to solve my problem. They're like, great, what is your problem? My problem is this. You don't need quantum computing for that. So make sure you know what you're trying to do very clearly, who's your customer, and what you're trying to build for them, and whether that solution that you're looking at is going to work here. That is one piece of advice I'll give you because I learned that myself in Nigeria.
Okay, machine gun question.
All right, my name is Charles Muhindo from Kampala. I run a startup called Mambo Pay, and we are in transactions. So, two quick questions.
No, one question. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll go maybe for the biggest question.
Okay.
In transactions, we surely don't want to lose data, okay? But assuming your architecture was actually lacking a little bit, yep. But then you have this other brilliant brain that comes on board and then advises you. So instead of just sort of patching what you already have, you decide to say, let me build something else from scratch and then, you know, test it well, put it on staging. But then by the time you're moving to production, the thing is transactions are happening all the time. You understand? You sort of want to push this that is sitting on staging to production and you sort of don't want to switch guys off because, you know, then your customer care lines are just going to plays out. So how best can I be able to really, you know, move to production without actually suffering?
Thank you. Thank you for the question.
That's a fascinating question and a very challenging one. Yeah. A long time ago, I worked on a product Microsoft made called Zune, and it was a music service that people could use. And I was working on the team that was building the back-end marketplace for Zune. One of the big challenges that we decided we were going to try and solve as a services team was what we called zero downtime deployments, meaning I don't want, when I'm upgrading my service to do something new, I don't want anybody to experience any sort of loss of service. And when you're dealing with transactions, that's really important. One of the approaches we took in Halo was a lot of our data was going through queues, and I think we were using service bus queues, but now we use Event Hub queues, which is another technology from Microsoft. And so we were funneling all of our data into that queue, and when we wanted to change the system at the back, we started fanning the data out. And so data would go to the old system and the new system at the same time. And then you have to build the new system so you don't mess it up because you're now getting data happening twice. But if you build the right idempotency into your transactions and stuff, that's actually doable. And so it takes a little bit of work and learning, and you should definitely plan to figure out how you're going to actually test in production and make sure that this thing is really working. And so finding your data out, coming out of a queue is one really great way to solve that problem. Because you can stand up a staging environment that is reading the exact same data as your production environment, and you can start watching it and verifying it. And that's one great approach. There's other ways to do it. Another example is Microsoft has this technology called Service Fabric that actually helps address a lot of these needs. And that's another way you can approach the problem.
And we are using Service Fabric. And so that's one way to solve that problem.
Okay, fantastic. And it's nice that you've talked because so our panel is almost done. I just want Bryce and John to say last words, a minute each, please.
You go.
Do you want to go last?
Sure. Last words. I think thinking about engineering at scale, I think the point about hiring, I think Andela is really trying to change that. And really, we're trying to create the next wave of technology leaders that will be able to support companies building your technical solutions at all the different levels, from junior developer all the way to architects and all that type of stuff. So we're really trying to create that next wave of African technology leaders to support all these awesome tech companies and businesses that are coming up in Africa and really change the technology landscape. Yeah.
John?
As I mentioned earlier, our mission is to deliver high-quality energy affordably to everyone. 5 years ago, 6 people, 100 customers, now 2,500 staff and 450,000 households, 2.25 million people. And the future is going to be full of growth for us. The thing behind all the technology we have deployed is customer service and service uptime. It's not technology for its own sake, and it's technology with an awareness that we face challenges around power, network connectivity, as you alluded to, and skills gaps that we need to fill. For us, we've engineered it that way to ensure that we can grow and grow with our customers while giving them the best service they've ever experienced in their lives.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being a fantastic panel. I mean, I think they deserve a clap, right?
A big one.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Massive clap to our panelists and our moderator. Thank you, James. You did a good job. Thank you.